Hi, everyone. And thank you, Lynn, for that information. I appreciate that. So I'll find someone for the March 20 satsang. So hi, everyone, and welcome to the Guiding Lights, followed by Prayer Circle. I don't know if it'll be quiet at my house today or if there'll be some commotion. I have some furniture that I'm giving away to New Horizons, which is a local thrift shop, in fact, right by Lynn's house. And so they're supposed to come this afternoon to pick it up, and of course I don't know when, and it could be during my Guiding Light teaching or it could be during Prayer Circle. Francine is here in case they come during that time so that she can deal with them, but we might hear dog barking, stuff like that. So so there might be a bit of commotion. Or they might come after I'm done teaching, and it might be quiet the whole time. We'll just see how it works out. I'm giving away a dining room table and a desk. Yeah, an old desk. That, I don't know if you remember my old desk, Lynn, that was held together with tape. I'm giving away that old desk that's been held together with tape for more than 6 years. And Ron is buying me a new desk. I'm having new furniture. Yeah. I'm having new furniture delivered on Monday. Over the weekend, Danielle will be moving the bedroom furniture out of that bedroom, and then my new office furniture will come on Monday, and then I'll be moving into her room, and that will be my new office. So, yeah, that old desk is going away, as well as, I don't know if you remember, Lynn, downstairs there was a little white dining room table with two chairs. They're taking that also. So, we are here, as I mentioned, for the Guiding Light, and last week we looked at John chapter 5 up through about verse 24, I think. And so today we'll be starting where we left off last week. Usually I sit down and I kind of look at what I read last week just before I start teaching so that I can kind of give a review, and today I didn't have time. I was getting ice shoveled off the sidewalk and all that stuff for New Horizons coming, so even I don't have a memory of what last week was. So what I will do is I will begin reading at verse 16, and I'm sure as I start reading at verse 16 in chapter 5, last week's teaching will come back to me. And then we'll continue around verse 25, I think, is where we did not discuss last week. So before we do that, why don't we play our music, which is just kind of our time of stillness. This song is called, this is one of my favorites. It's called Innocence by Avril, I don't know how to say her last name, Lavigne. I think that's it, Avril Lavigne. Here we go.
Waking up to see that everything is okay. The first time in my life and now it's so great. Slowing down, I look around and I'm so amazed. I think about the little things that make life great. I wouldn't change a thing about it. This is the best feeling. This innocence is brilliant. I hope that it will stay. This moment is perfect. Please don't go away. I need you now. And I'll hold on. Don't you let it pass you by. I found a place so safe, not a single tear. The first time in my life and now it's so clear. Feel calm, I belong, I'm so happy here. It's so strong and now I let myself be sincere. I wouldn't change a thing. This is the best feeling. This innocence is brilliant.
beautiful song reminded me of Al-Malik, which is what the Sufi contemplation group has been contemplating this week. Also, Holy Spirit spoke to me through Larry. Larry has typed on the board. He says regarding Joel's teaching. So it's a little bit funny because he thinks he's talking about Joel Goldsmith's teaching, and I'm sure he is. But what Larry has reminded me of is what the teaching was from the Guiding Light last week, because it was really the exact same thing. I think that's so funny. So here's what Larry wrote on the board. Regarding Joel's teaching, rise up, Lazarus. If you want to raise the dead, rise up yourself. Where are the dead but in your own thoughts, projection? Be the peace you want to see in the world. And that was the teaching last week. Remember, we talked about raising the dead last week. That's exactly what we talked about. We talked about that when we are spending time in contemplation of truth, when we are spending time in meditation, the energy of that time feeds into divine law and creates grace. And that grace awakens others, for lack of better words, even though there are no others. That grace awakens others. And awakening people from their unconsciousness is raising the dead. So we are literally raising the dead as we raise ourselves up. As we raise ourselves, we also raise up the world, right? We are literally raising the dead when we are sitting in contemplation of truth or walking in contemplation of truth. And when we are in meditation. So thank you, Larry, for accidentally reminding me of last week's teaching. That was perfect. I am still going to go ahead and read from the Bible, starting at verse 16 in John chapter 5, just in order to get us back in the groove, because our discussion today starts in the middle of a conversation that Jesus is having. So let me start at the beginning. First of all, 2 weeks ago, we saw that Jesus healed a man at, I believe it was called Bethesda. Yes, he healed a man at Bethesda. And he happened to heal this man on a Saturday. I keep saying Sunday, but actually Saturday is the Sabbath. So every time I say Sunday, just shake your head, you know, oh, come on, she should know better than that. This comes from being raised Christian instead of Jewish. Saturday is actually the Sabbath, so for every time that I've said Sunday in the past and for every time that I will say Sunday in the future, I apologize. But Jesus healed this man at the Bethesda pool on Saturday, the Sabbath. And the Jews, it says, really referring to the teachers of the law, the priests, in Jerusalem, the Jews, they felt that this was a sin. They perceived it as Jesus working on Saturday, the Sabbath. So this is where we begin at verse 16 in John chapter 5. So because Jesus was doing these things on the Sabbath, the Jews persecuted him. Jesus said to them, "My Father is always at his work to this very day, and I too am working." For this reason, the Jews tried all the harder to kill him. Not only was he breaking the Sabbath, but he was even calling God his own Father, making himself equal with God. Jesus gave them this answer. "I tell you the truth. The Son can do nothing by himself. He can do only what he sees his Father doing, because whatever the Father does, the Son also does. For the Father loves the Son and shows him all he does. Yes, to your amazement, he will show him even greater things than these. For just as the Father raises the dead and gives them life, even so the Son gives life to whom he is pleased to give it. Moreover, the Father judges no one, but has entrusted all judgment to the Son, that all may honor the Son just as they honor the Father. He who does not honor the Son does not honor the Father who sent him. I tell you the truth, whoever hears my word and believes him who sent me has eternal life and will not be condemned. He has crossed over from death to life." And we discussed all the way up to that point last week. So that's all on last week's audio. What I'm going to begin reading now, this will be today's discussion. It's a continuation, however, of the same monologue. I tell you the truth. A time is coming and has now come when the dead will hear the voice of the Son of God, and those who hear will live. For as the Father has life in himself, so he has granted the Son to have life in himself, and he has given him authority to judge because he is the Son of Man. Do not be amazed at this, for a time is coming when all who are in their graves will hear his voice and will come out, and who have done good will rise to live, and those who have done evil will rise to be condemned. By myself I can do nothing. I judge only as I hear, and my judgment is just, for I seek not to please myself, but him who sent me. So a lot of this that I'm about to discuss is really, the same as last week, which makes sense because, of course, we're still looking at the same monologue. So it's going to be a little bit of a review, maybe. But let's go ahead and start with verse 25, John chapter 5, verse 25. I tell you the truth. A time is coming and has now come when the dead will hear the voice of the Son of God, and those who hear will live. So as I mentioned in my review, the dead are not physically dead. The dead are the unconscious. And by unconscious, I mean the dead are those of us who are receiving thoughts into the mind from the script, from karma, from the manifestation of spiritual law, and mistaking those thoughts that we are receiving, which are really just script, just story, mistaking those thoughts for our thoughts, and therefore believing those thoughts, focusing our attention on those thoughts, speaking from those thoughts, acting from those thoughts. We're kind of like robots or zombies. And we just behave based on the thoughts in our mind with no discernment at all. That's the dead. And of course, a lot of people walking about in the world today are that walking dead that we are referring to here. And many of us are at least still partially dead. We've got like one arm in the grave, one arm in the grave and one arm reaching up to heaven, you know, but we're somewhere in between, you could say. To say that we are totally awake would be a mistake because we still sometimes fall for those thoughts in the mind, right? And we still sometimes speak from them and we still sometimes act from them. So we're still, you could say, partially dead. Maybe we're in the process of rising up from the dead. But that process does not seem to be complete for most of us yet anyway. So Jesus is talking about this. He's saying, I tell you the truth. A time is coming and has now come. Right? It's coming and it's here now. And so this process that we are involved in, this process of awakening, this process of being resurrected from our unconscious thoughts into pure consciousness, this process is here. I mean, and we know it because we're experiencing it. In what appears to be 2,000 years ago, Jesus was also then saying, it is here. And in fact, this time of awakening has always been here. There have always been people awakening. And there have always been people not yet awakening. But the time of awakening has always been here. It's not off in the future. It's always happening right now, and there's always resurrection occurring. And so this is what Jesus is referring to. I tell you the truth. A time is coming and has now come when the dead will hear the voice of the Son of God, and those who hear will live. And remember, when he talks about the voice of the Son of God, what he is referring to is what we would call grace. We really experience the voice of the Son of God internally. We may be listening to someone outside of us who is teaching, or we may be reading a book outside of us. But if you pay close attention, you'll notice that the confirmation, the internal confirmation that you get that what you are reading is truth, or what you are reading is pointing to truth, or what you are reading is for you and you are to pay attention to it, that comes from within. Where does that internal confirmation come from? How do we know what we do not know? There's the connection, of course, to the one mind, because we are all the one mind. But we've always been connected to the one mind. And maybe 20 years ago, we could have read the same thing or heard the same thing and not recognized it. So why is there this internal confirmation that's happening now? That is what we call grace. And grace comes from all of our brothers and sisters who have already spent time contemplating truth and meditating, and it even comes from our prior time of contemplating truth and meditating. And so this is the voice of the Son of God. The voice of the Son of God is all of us and all of our brothers and sisters when we are in contemplation of truth and when we are in meditation. That is when we are speaking. When we are in contemplation of truth. And right now, even though there are words coming out of my mouth, this is contemplation of truth that is happening now. But there could be no words coming out of my mouth, right? I could be just sitting quietly in a chair contemplating truth. And that's still speaking. When we contemplate truth, when we meditate, we are speaking as the Son of God. And that speaking mixes with divine law, just as all speaking mixes with divine law, right? In the beginning was the Word. That speaking mixes with divine law, creates grace, which continues to awaken us and continues to awaken others. And so as Jesus says, I tell you the truth. A time is coming and has now come when the dead will hear the voice of the Son of God. And those who hear will live. So we are listening to grace. We are listening to the voice of the Son of God, even while we're speaking as the Son of God. Both is happening. We are listening to the voice of the Son of God, and we are speaking as the Son of God. And this is what awakens us. Jesus continues, "For as the Father has life in himself, so he has granted the Son to have life in himself." It's interesting because you could say that we have all died. We have all died. It's more often called sleep. We've fallen into slumber. We've fallen asleep. We've fallen into a dream. We've fallen into illusion. But using the symbols that are being given here in the book of John, we have all died. We have died to who we are, to who we truly are. That's what we have done. We have died. The good news is this death is not permanent. Why is this death not permanent? Because who we are cannot be taken away from us. As this scripture says, "The Father has life in himself, and so he has granted the Son to have life in himself." That is a fact. We are the life that our Father is. We are the same as that which created us. And so no matter how much we die, meaning no matter how unconscious we become, no matter how much we listen to and believe ego, no matter if we become evil, you know, if we become the manifestation of evil in the world, and there are manifestations of evil in the world, let's imagine that we become that. Let's imagine that we become the mass killer, the child abuser, right? We become the evil in the world. That's as dead as we can become. We're listening to the darkest voice available to us in this storyline. Jesus is saying, even then, even then, there's life. There's life in you. And by life here, he really means God. There's God in you. If you fall to the lowest low that any human can fall to, you cannot fall so low as to extinguish your own light. That is impossible, because you have inherited your God nature from your Father, and you cannot extinguish the God nature. You can ignore it. You can ignore it really well. You can be a master at ignoring it, but you cannot extinguish it. And no matter how evil you appear to become, there will come a time when you will hear the voice of the Son of God, and you will listen, and you will awaken. And this is true for everyone. And this is what Jesus called the good news of the kingdom. Everyone will be saved in the language of Christianity. Everyone will awaken to their truth. No one has fallen so deep into darkness that they will not at some point rise to the voice of the Son of God. So Jesus says, I tell you the truth, a time is coming and has now come when the dead will hear the voice of the Son of God, and those who hear will live. For as the Father has life in himself, so he has granted the Son to have life in himself. And he has given him authority to judge, because he is the Son of Man. Now, we talked about what this meant last week, his authority to judge. It's what we more typically in our culture call discernment. But as we spoke about last week, divine law itself, which Jesus often refers to as the Father, divine law itself does not judge. Divine law simply functions. It simply functions. So if we are focused on dark thoughts, thoughts of untruth, those thoughts feed into divine law. Divine law does not say, oh no, that's a dark thought, I'm not going to manifest that. Divine law doesn't do that. Divine law manifests the darkness. If we spend all of our time contemplating attack, fear, guilt, blame, defense, all of that gets fed into divine law. Divine law does not reject any of it. Divine law accepts every bit of it. And all of that attack, fear, guilt, blame, defense is manifest in the world in a number of ways. So since divine law does not judge, since divine law does not discern, since divine law does not reject, who has the responsibility of choosing not to focus attention on untrue thoughts and instead to focus all of their attention and contemplative energy on thoughts that point to truth? Well, the Son. So the Son is the one who has the power to judge. And so if a thought comes into my mind, oh, I hate this person, or a thought comes into my mind, oh, that person is so wrong, they don't deserve to live, or a thought comes into my mind, oh my gosh, I don't deserve to live, I've been so evil, any type of thought at all that is untrue. I, as the Son of God, have the power to judge and to say that is an untrue thought. I won't believe it. I won't focus my attention on it. Sure, I feel the pull of that thought. The thought seems to have a gravity with it. I feel the temptation to be angry with a brother. I feel the temptation to see myself as guilty or unworthy. But I am the Son of God. I have the power to judge. And I judge these thoughts as untrue. And because I judge these thoughts as untrue, I will not give them my attention. I'm not going to waste my attention on something that is not true. And since I do not waste my attention on it, I do not cast it back into divine law, and it does not become manifest. This is the power of the Son of God. So the Father not only gave the Son life, a light that we cannot distinguish, no matter how unconscious we become, but the Father also gave us the power to judge. And as we judge, we change the world, because the world comes from the manifestation of divine law. And as we judge, we are choosing what to feed into that process of divine law and what not to feed into that process of divine law. And through that choice, we are changing the world. It's funny because A Course in Miracles says something about do not try to change the world, but change your mind about the world. The interesting thing is, as you change your mind about the world also changes, because we are the Son of God. So Jesus is talking about two gifts that we have that we can't get rid of. We can't return these gifts. We can't take them and exchange them. We cannot get rid of the life, the light, the holiness that we inherited from our Father. No matter how evil we choose to become, no matter how many people we choose to torture and murder, we cannot get rid of that life. And someday we will awaken to it. That is a gift that cannot be exchanged, cannot be returned. And the other gift is the power to judge. And we are always, always judging. Even, and again, the word judge is being used differently here. It really means discern. It means choosing the thoughts we're going to believe and not believe. And even if we happen to be making our descent into hell, even if we happen to be on a trip, down, 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 on our way to becoming the evilest person the planet has ever seen, how are we doing that? We're judging the whole way. We are choosing to believe the dark thoughts. That's a form of judgment. We can't not judge. We can't not choose what to believe and what not to believe. It's a part of our nature. It's a gift we cannot return. And so since this is a gift that we cannot return, why not use the gift in order to reflect the glory of the one who gave it to us? Why not use the gift of judgment to judge the dark thoughts as untrue, and to let them go so they are not fed back into the process of creation, and to judge all thoughts that point toward truth as worthy of our contemplation, and to give them our attention and give them our contemplation so they are fed back into the process of creation, and more grace is manifest and more people awaken. In Kabbalah, this is called raising the holy sparks. It's kind of interesting because, you know, Jesus, remember, was Jewish. Kabbalah is Jewish. And Kabbalah says the same thing that Jesus is saying right here, the exact same thing. Kabbalah says that at the time of the Big Bang, right, which would be when the universe was created, form was created, at the time of the Big Bang, the light exploded, and that light is in every single particle of manifestation. And just like Jesus is saying here, you cannot extinguish that light. The light is in every single particle of manifestation. However, the light is covered with darkness. the darkness being belief in form as truth, forgetfulness about who we are, belief in selfish ideas, in ego thoughts, right? That's the darkness. So these holy sparks, the light, are covered with darkness. And the Kabbalists teach that what our job is to raise the holy sparks. That's what Jesus is calling raise the dead. And how do we raise the holy sparks? How do we raise the dead? By the power of judgment. By choosing not to give our attention and not to give our belief to the thoughts of darkness, thoughts of selfishness, belief in the world, ego thoughts. And to spend a great amount of time in contemplation, deep contemplation of truth. In fact, a Kabbalist would recommend hours a day in contemplation of truth and in meditation. Jesus is teaching Kabbalah. He's teaching the exact same thing. Raise the dead. Raise the holy sparks by raising yourself. So again, I tell you the truth. A time is coming and has now come when the dead will hear the voice of the Son of God, and those who hear will live. For as the Father has life in himself, so he has granted the Son to have life in himself. And he has given him authority to judge, because he is the Son of Man. Do not be amazed at this. For a time is coming when all who are in their graves, I love this sentence. Listen to what he is saying. All who are in their graves. See, no one is being left out of this teaching. No one is too evil for the resurrection. A time is coming when all who are in their graves will hear his voice and come out. And then there's a mark in the Bible. The mark, it's called an M dash. And it's a little bit funny because what follows the M dash is a little bit different than what Jesus has been saying all along. And it brings one to wonder if maybe this couldn't be clearly understood. And so it was rationalized in the mind. And the next couple of sentences that got written after the M dash were actually the rationalization of an author or a translator rather than the teaching from Jesus, because it's different. Listen to this. Jesus says, do not be amazed. And when Jesus says, do not be amazed, I really think he's saying, do not doubt. You know, do not doubt what I'm saying. This is what he means by do not be amazed. Don't think this is beyond belief. Don't think this is beyond truth. Do not be amazed at this. For a time is coming when all who are in their graves will hear his voice and come out. M dash. Those who have done good will rise to live, and those who have done evil will rise to be condemned. The only proper way to understand that is now at this point we're not talking about people, we're talking about thoughts. All thoughts that point towards truth will be fed back into divine law. All thoughts that point toward falsehood will be let go, and then will in that way cease to exist. They will not be refed into divine law. It's the only way to properly understand what follows the M dash. Then Jesus says, by myself, I can do nothing. And we've seen this teaching before. We've talked about this teaching before. Jesus is saying that he is not separate from all of us. Even the words he is speaking, the grace that is coming from his mouth, comes from all of us and the time that we spend in contemplation of truth, in desiring truth, in meditation. Jesus is not something that is separate from what we are. Jesus is not something that is separate from divine law. He does not have a power to manifest words apart from us. If words of truth are coming through the mouth of Jesus, those words of truth are coming through the mouth of Jesus because our oneness has desired them, sought them, contemplated them, called them forth through grace. Jesus says he can't do anything on his own. And none of us can do anything on our own because we are connected beyond the power of the mind's ability to understand. By myself, I can do nothing. I judge only as I hear. In other words, even the judgment, the gift of judgment, the gift of judging whether a particular thought is to be believed and given attention, or whether a particular thought is not to be believed and should be let go. Jesus is saying, I don't even do that. I've just told you we have the power to judge, but that's not wholly true. We can't even judge. We can't even discern on our own. There's something inside of us that comes from grace, that is grace, that you might call the Holy Spirit or inner spiritual wisdom. It tells me how to judge. It guides me to see a thought as untrue and not worth my attention, or true and worth my embrace and contemplation. So even my power to judge is not an individual power. Even my power to judge appropriately comes from grace. And grace comes from you and from everyone else who chooses to contemplate truth. And you know what? Even your choice to contemplate truth was not individual. For there was something in you, grace, that guided you to spend that time in contemplation. Where did that come from? Others who contemplated. But they also, by grace. He is saying that nothing is happening on an individual level, no matter how it appears. Again, the connection is so profound, it is far beyond the mind's ability to understand. By myself, I can do nothing. I judge only as I hear, and my judgment is just, for I seek not to please myself, but him who sent me. So when he says my judgment is just, what he means is he is a surrendered soul who wants to hear the grace, who wants to be a manifestation of truth rather than a manifestation of untruth. And so because he is a surrendered soul who wants to hear grace, he hears grace more easily. But he is still fed grace. He acts on grace. He is not individually disconnected from the whole. And so that is the end of that particular conversation. Well, not exactly, actually. I think the next conversation is probably on the same day. It's just my NIV Bible has given it a new subtitle. But it looks like he hasn't left the vicinity. He's probably still standing in the same place, talking to the same people. So let me just get a drink of water, and then we'll continue. So this next portion of the monologue is called Testimonies About Jesus. I'll read first the whole thing. This is John chapter 5, starting at verse 31 and going all the way through the end of the chapter, verse 47. If I testify about myself, my testimony is not valid. There is another who testifies in my favor, and I know that his testimony about me is valid. You have sent to John, and he has testified to the truth. Not that I accept human testimony, but I mention it that you may be saved. John was a lamp that burned and gave light, and you chose for a time to enjoy his light. I have testimony weightier than that of John, for the very work that the Father has given me to finish, and which I am doing, testifies that the Father has sent me. And the Father who sent me has himself testified concerning me. You have never heard his voice, nor seen his form, nor does his word dwell in you, for you do not believe the one he sent. You diligently study the scriptures, because you think that by them you possess eternal life. These are the scriptures that testify about me, yet you refuse to come to me to have life. I do not accept praise from men, but I know you. I know that you do not have the love of God in your hearts. I have come in my Father's name, and you do not accept me. But if someone else comes in his own name, you will accept him. How can you believe if you accept praise from one another, yet make no effort to obtain the praise that comes from the only God? But do you not think I will accuse you before the Father? Your accuser is Moses, on whom your hopes are set. If you believed Moses, you would believe me, for he wrote about me. But since you do not believe what he wrote, how are you going to believe what I say? So that's the next portion of the monologue. So starting back at John chapter 5, verse 31. If I testify about myself, my testimony is not valid. This is a sentence that actually rings in my ears fairly regularly. You know, one of the things that I can talk about, and I certainly sometimes do, though not as much as I used to, is me, Regina Dawn Akers, or Regina, you know, me. I can talk about what I like. I can talk about what I don't like. I can talk about who I like, who I don't like. I can talk about what I want, what I don't want, right? I can talk about me. What's that song that... In fact, why don't we just pause for a moment? Let's listen to the song, because this is a perfect example. Let's see. Let me see if I can find this song about what Jesus is saying here. Me, where is it? Shoot, it's a country song. If I could think of the name. I want to talk about me, right? Wanna? Here it is. Listen to Toby Keith.
Indiana. We talk about your grandma down in Alabama. We talk about talk about your guys of every shape and size, the ones that you despise and the ones you idolize. We talk about your heart, about your brain and your smarts and your medical charts and when you start. You know talking about you makes me grin. But every now and then, I want to talk about me, want to talk about I, want to talk about number one. Oh, my, me, my, what I think, what I like, what I know, what I want, what I see. I like talking about you, you usually. But occasionally, I want to talk about me. I want to talk about me.
Thank you very much, Toby, for helping to illustrate what Jesus is talking about here. Okay, now listen to what Jesus says after listening to Toby. Jesus says, if I testify about myself, my testimony is not valid. In other words, if I talk about me, if I talk about who I am, what I like, what I feel, what I want, that's all untruth. That is all untruth. Anything that I can say to you about me is not true. Think about that. Think about every time we're doing what Toby Keith is talking about, I want to talk about me, right? We're speaking untruth. Every time. If I tell you what I like, what I don't like, who I don't like, what I want, what I don't want, I am engaged in untruth. So Jesus is saying that if I was standing here talking about me, then everything I'm saying could not be true. The only way that what I'm saying is true is that it's true of all of us. All of us have the light that cannot be extinguished. All of us can raise the dead. All of us can judge or discern thoughts as true or untrue. If I was talking about me, it couldn't possibly be true. Nothing can be true about me. This is beyond the idea of me. This comes from beyond. So Jesus says, if I testify about myself, my testimony is not valid. And then he says, there is another who testifies in my favor, and I know that his testimony about me is valid. There is another who testifies in my favor, and I know that his testimony about me is valid. And he's talking about John the Baptist. Now, we read about John the Baptist way back in John chapter 1. And what we saw was that John the Baptist, although he admitted he was not yet the light, meaning he was not yet raised from the dead, right? He was still in that process, just like most of us. John was just like most of us, one arm still in the grave and one arm reaching out, right? So John says, I am not the light. But John said he had the ability to recognize the light. He had enough clarity within himself. He had awakened enough. He had gone through the purification process enough that he could recognize the light. He knew the light when he saw it, when he heard it. And he testified that the light was in this man Jesus. Not that the light isn't in all of us. It's just that it had been uncovered enough, that enough false believing had been let go. Jesus says something similar in the Course. He says something in the beginning portion of the Course about how he is the same as us. And I don't remember, I wish I could remember the words exactly. So I'll just make up my own words that that I think make the same point. I am the same love that you are. The only difference is I am nothing but that. Right? He says something like that. Maybe somebody knows the exact quote based on the way I did it, and you can write it down. Right? Or we could say, I am the same light that you are. The only difference is, in my case, there's nothing left but the light. In other words, you're like the Kabbalist holy spark that has the perfect light, but it's covered with darkness. In my case, right, the darkness has been removed and there's just the light. The light is exposed. And John had the ability to recognize the exposed light. But the light that I have, the light that I am, the light that I speak from, it is not me. You see? It's very hard to put these things into words, which is why Jesus is so easily misunderstood. How can you say the light that I am is not me, right? But this is what he's trying to say. He's saying John recognized it, and you trusted John. And yet everyone, we all know that everyone still misunderstood Jesus as talking about me, right? When they read the Bible and Jesus is talking, they think he's talking about me. I am the Son of God. I am, right? I am this. Me, just me. Even when he says the word I am, we know he's not talking about me. So that's what Jesus is saying here. The truth that I am speaking is not about me. This is truth, period. This is truth. It transcends the me. It transcends the you. And yet it's what we all are, right? So Jesus says again, if I testify about myself, my testimony is not valid. There is another who testifies in my favor, and I know that his testimony about me is valid. You have sent to John, and he has testified to the truth. Not that I accept human testimony, but I mention it that you may be saved. In other words, what he is trying to say here is, I don't really need John's testimony to vouch for everything I'm saying. But I love you. I care about you. I understand how what I'm saying is different than what you're used to. Different than what you have been taught to believe. But what I'm saying is our truth. And I can see the fear in your eyes. I can see that you don't know whether you should trust me. Especially since in your eyes I just sinned by healing a man on the Sabbath. But I know you just trusted John, and John said the same thing. I'm not telling you this because I need John to make it true. I need John to vouch for me. I don't. But I'm hoping to open your ears. Because I love you, and what I'm saying is true for you too. You have sent to John, and he has testified to the truth. Not that I accept human testimony, but I mention it that you may be saved. John was a lamp that burned and gave light, and you chose for a time to enjoy his light. And so again, he's saying, John, you trust John, and John knows this. So can you take that trust and extend it to what I say? I have testimony weightier than that of John. For the very work that the Father has given me to finish, and which I am doing, testifies that the Father has sent me. Now, when he says, the Father has sent me, in effect, he is saying, I listen to only one voice. The voice of grace, the voice of the Holy Spirit, the voice of inner spiritual wisdom, the voice of our right mind, the voice of the Son of God. I listen to only one voice. I speak from only one voice. I am moved by only one voice. And how can you know this is true? Simply watch me with your heart. You will see that I don't attack. You will see that I don't offend. You will see that I don't blame. You will see that I don't experience self-hatred. You will see that I love truth. You will see that I love you. The best testimony regarding what I say is for you to look at me through your heart. Sure, John had the ability to recognize the light, and you trust John. But that's testimony once removed. John is recognizing the truth, and you're trusting John. I have testimony weightier than that. It's your own internal confirmation when you look through the heart. When you put aside your judging mind and you look through the heart, you will have direct knowledge of the truth, because you are the same light, and so you will recognize the light. The light has the ability to recognize the light, and that is my weightier testimony. It's not once removed, it's direct. I have testimony weightier than that of John. For the very work that the Father has given me to finish, and which I am doing, testifies that the Father has sent me. And the Father who sent me has himself testified concerning me. Again, that is your internal confirmation. Why are you still standing here listening to me? Because in spite of the fact that your mind is fighting against me, something in you hears and recognizes and knows, and that's the Father in you. And I'm going to need to stop there. So let me make a note of where I am in this. And the Father who sent me has himself testified concerning me. Okay, so we'll stop right there. That's the first half of verse 37. So we'll get into the second half of verse 37 and beyond next week, which will be very interesting because at first glance, without looking at it with your right mind, it looks like Jesus switches to attack now. But he doesn't, so we'll look at that next week. Now, I am going to go into prayer circle. As FYI, New Horizons has just arrived, and they're going to be taking the furniture. So we'll see if we get through prayer circle without them needing my attention. Francine's here, so hopefully she can take care of it.